Welcome to Talaterra, a podcast about freelance educators working in natural resource fields and environmental education. Today, my guest is Cynthia Espinosa Marrero, a food systems scholar and founder of Pulgium Consulting. Cynthia has a bachelor's degree in sustainable food management and a master's degree in environmental education. In 2018, Cynthia was featured on a list of Latinx Changemakers You Need to Know by Latina Magazine. How does Cynthia apply her classroom studies to her work addressing issues related to diversity, equity, and inclusion in nature? How does she teach permaculture online? And how does she strive to maintain balance between work and home? Let's find out. Thank you so much for wanting to share what you do. If you could introduce yourself to listeners.
Yeah, so thank you also, Tony, for creating this podcast and getting our work out there. So we really appreciate it. I know I do, for sure. So my name is Cynthia Espinosa Marrero. I currently reside in a small city in Massachusetts called Holyoke. We're in the western part of the state. And I am passionate about food, community, social, racial justice, and been a community activist for many years here and also an educator. Very informal, and I think part of being an community activist or community advocate got me to learn that I want to do environment education. So through that journey, I was able to get a master's degree in the field, environmental education field, and really apply what I was learning in the classroom to the community, which was really exciting. So I'm a new mom, so I decided to also take care of myself and all that, and decided to look at more independent education and consulting. So I currently own Pulgium Consulting, which is named after the Pennyroyal plant. And that plant kind of ties into a story who really inspired me, and I feel like was my first environmental educator, which was my grandmother. So many of our grandmothers sometimes are very knowledgeable on plants in the environment and food specifically. So I feel like my grandmother was all of that, and she inspired me to teach and be in this career right now. She passed in 2016, and that's when I kind of had the aha moment that because of her influence, because of her way of being involved and in touch with nature, she taught me all about plants. And I realized that I'm following that legacy now. So my family have been farm workers for generations, and it wasn't until, her passing that reflecting of my interaction with her that I learned, wow, I'm really following the steps of my ancestors. So it was very exciting. And I found myself in different organizations and seeing organizations asking for more information about storytelling, about different stories, like diversity, equity, and inclusion, and what does that even mean to us, and how does that tie into environmental education. So I found myself in this spot of looking at research, because I love research, looking at environmental education practices, and also sometimes sharing my stories in ways of other people of color who are in environmental field want to go about, talking about diversity, equity, inclusion in nature. So I found myself creating this unique consulting business to do trainings and professional development on these topics of diversity, equity, inclusion. And within those professional developments, I tie in activities that relate to environmental education or things that I would do with either a group of kids or with a group of adults outside. I will tie it into professional development because we all got kids at heart. So we also need some playtime, some nature time to connect and find a common ground to then have conversations that can be uncomfortable, but then we can find solutions to those. So that's sort of what I'm doing now as an independent educator. I'm certified in permaculture. which many people know, but permaculture is inspired by indigenous knowledge to meet human needs while increasing the health of the ecosystems through design. And this is a way, it's kind of like a design system looking at nature and the patterns in nature and how can you design either a backyard, a building, or even system, you know, social systems like government, organization, culture. So I do that independently as well. I joined 39 other women from all around the world, which is very exciting, to teach a certification class online. It was really fun, Tania. I have a student from Australia that I spoke with Saturday night, you know. Over there, Sunday, and it was very exciting to learn about different, you know, a whole different country all over. If it wasn't for this opportunity of doing this independently, I wouldn't be able to learn about Australia and learn together with another student on how to go about nature. I also do this work in Worcester, Massachusetts, which is sort of central Massachusetts, and we do it more with homeowners, how they can create a very affordable, even for free, you know, finding free items to create a garden in their home that could then they can have the ownership of their own food. So it's a big, broad information of sort of what I do. I do independently, you know, professional development, including activities that involve environmental education. And I also love doing the one-on-one teaching the community, mostly gardening and food-related education.
You are involved in the community at lots of different levels, from schools to individuals to organizations. How do you connect with clients? Do they come to you or do you reach out to them?
I do a little bit of both. So at the beginning of my consulting, this will be my second year doing it. A lot of it was through my network. People that I knew, they connected me with potential, you know, gigs or organizations that I should consider or do, or events that I should attend. And I also research what conferences related to environmental education or food or social justice are around, and do my best to attend them so that I can network and even try to present, you know, a workshop or do a presentation to introduce myself and do some hands-on activities.
What have you discovered that works best for you when it comes to making new connections?
Yeah, I think definitely putting myself out there, being a little uncomfortable at trying to go to a conference or a community event or some gathering that might have different organizations, to really go and be part of it. Part of be very engaged and also, you know, if that, not being afraid of facilitating a conversation or kind of taking the leadership on that has been really good.
I read about your Women in Permaculture program. That is fantastic.
Thank you.
And how many countries are involved in that project? And if you could provide the listeners a little background information about how that works. I watched the video, and I will link to the video for sure in the show notes for this episode.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for that. So this all came about through Heather Flores. She's an author of Food Not Lawns book, which I highly recommend. She reached out through social media. You know, social media is also a great avenue to both network and learn. There's a permaculture women, a women in permaculture group, and she reached out the idea, hey, I want to create an online course. So usually permaculture, you get a certification, and that gives you credibility and also all the knowledge on how to go about designing, again, you know, systems, backyard or things like that. And permaculture originally was, I would say, was taken, you know, was kind of created, developed in Australia. But a lot of the knowledge is very indigenous, and most of the knowledge and practices have been practiced by women. But back in the day, you know, when permaculture, you know, started, sort of in the, let's say, early 80s and 90s or so, a lot of men we're the experts in this. And we're getting paid, you know, thousands of dollars for that, for sharing knowledge that's from the community, from mostly from women and from indigenous communities. So Heather and other women, we noticed that trend, and we're like, hey, we are in this field because we know this, we practice it, and we want to give it back in a way that's meaningful and accessible. So there's no online classes, there's no online courses, on permaculture that we found. We also wanted to include the women's point of view and talk about socially, you know, as a woman, we are mothers, we are caretakers sometimes, so we wanted to include all that aspect into scientific knowledge. Because we're scientists, we're everything. We're incredible. So we have people from the UK, some instructors from the UK, Australia, Spain, the US, and people who are involved in the Caribbean as well, who came together, and we all took on a topic to cover. I cover big land, so how to go about designing and looking at your, you know, let's say 1,000, you know, 100 plus acres, and how can you go about designing it so it can maximize your production and your goals for that. So there's other, we have topics about, you know, looking at your livelihood and how the permaculture applies to it, because we have ethics and principles. So the ethics are earth care, people care, fair share, and how can you go about taking care of the earth in your own daily practice, taking care of yourself and other people, and then sharing the surplus, whether it's you're above income and you want to donate, or if you have a farm and you have a lot of food, what can you do with that? So this course, usually the requirement is 72 hours, but this one you get two certificates. You get the 72-hour certificate, and you also get an extra certificate to cover topics about social permaculture. And a lot of it talks also in the social permaculture certification, again, mentions kind of like livelihood, caretaking, but also like social justice, racial justice, and all that. So you get a lot. And it's incredible to see the different expertise, both, you know, the science, the social, the humanities, all in one course. So it's very unique. And we're still learning from our students, you know, getting feedback to improve this course.
That's wonderful. And so how long has the course been taught?
So we opened up the website last April. And again, this is our first year. We kind of had the idea that people will take about up to a year because it's at your own pace. There's videos, all the courses have videos and handouts that you do. And at the end, you create a design project. And what's also very unique is that all the instructors also are mentors to the students. So I have students that I personally, you know, sign up to myself, but also we get assigned students. So I have a student, all my students don't live near me. They're all pretty far. One of them is in Milwaukee. The other one, like I mentioned, in Australia. And I have another student in California. I'm the mentor as well. So I can talk to them. I recently talked to them via Zoom or online just to see how their project is going, if they have questions. And, you know, we can meet. I know some of the another instructor in Seattle, she happens to have all her students nearby, so they have, like, monthly potluck meetings. So it varies per instructor to meet up with their students. So I think that's also very unique that you have that mentorship, and we can meet up or talk, you know, as often as the student needs. So it's very unique.
So as a mentor in this program, and your specialty then are big land projects?
Yes.
Do the students you work with, do they primarily have big land projects specifically, or are they homeowners as well?
They do not. So I have one student that has a big land project, but so in this course I teach that module, that section, but I do have some expertise in other. I have more expertise in soils, also like social permaculture and how to, you know, do community organizing, how to involve the community. So one of my students has more of a community garden project idea. My student in Australia does have a big land project, so that kind of applies there. And the other one is more of a homeowner who's trying to involve their family to do a garden. So they all vary, and all the projects, all the students have very different goals for that. Some are more personal. They want to, you know, plan their lives around taking care of the earth or being more environmentally friendly and applying these principles and practices to their lives. Others are, you know, have, you know, 65 acres. So it all varies. And I think it's very unique. The students, like I mentioned, the ones that sign up through me, I can, you know, they picked me because they thought that I had the skills that they need. So I thought that was really unique and nice to be like, oh, wow, you know, I got chosen because somebody really wants to connect. So I think that was really, really cool to do that. And I think that's something as an independent educator, I see myself, like, sometimes the confidence level, because you're going out there by yourself, trying to, like, almost, like, sell your expertise. And so it could be sometimes challenging and scary. But at the same time, you know, many of us have the experience, the practice, and have certifications and things like that, that we do know what we're doing and we're passionate about it. So it's always reassuring that to be like, yes, you know, people do want to learn from me. And I'm one that I like to facilitate and not so much teach at, but also learn together what people know, because I feel like everybody has their story, their experiences, and they're valuable in the field.
No, absolutely. But the people you work with, and they are already interested in permaculture. So you're not walking into a room full of strangers doing a hard sell or anything like that. They are already wanting what you have. True?
I would say yes. And no, part of it is yes. I would say for the online course, yes, people already heard the term, or they heard, you know, they learned about it in ways. And the reason I say no is, so an example, the group in Worcester, my students that I work with, we teach permaculture, but we don't announce it like that way. We go about doing gardening, and we lead by example. We apply the knowledge into the practice, because we want to make it accessible. Sometimes, you know, different big topics or can be very challenging and cannot be very welcoming. So we try to meet people where they're at and introduce that way. So an example, people are interested in growing tomatoes because that's what they eat, and they heard, you know, they probably heard it's good, or they're really interested in trying to save money. So that's how I'm going to approach it. Let's talk about tomatoes. And I'm like, oh, by the way, if you do this to the soil, it will help your tomato more. So it's kind of like really looking at how does it, you know, what's the common ground? What's the level that we can do this work?
9 years ago, for my previous educational resource, I interviewed somebody who was a permaculturist. She was building a permaculture garden at an arboretum in a botanic garden here in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And that was my first exposure to permaculture, and I just loved it. And I was just amazed at what can come from a foundation of cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
I mean, that garden just took off, and it was amazing. What type of reactions do you get from people who are new to permaculture and who start something from cardboard boxes? And then do they look at you like, are you crazy?
I think, yeah, I would say all of that. I think a lot of it is kind of like aha moments, like, oh, that's very simple. You know, sometimes people, some terms and words, you know, can be very scary, if not known. Or, you know, when you think about permaculture, you only, you know, picture forest-like gardens that I don't know what's growing in there. And then people who might not know about native plants, because usually, you know, with permaculture, you look at how to either include native plants and really build up the ecosystem. So a lot of that includes perennial plants, so plants that, you know, grow for many years and on. And right now there's still, you know, the societal mind shift of annuals and, like, I need my vegetables right now. I mean, I need my tomatoes, you know, in certain areas. And I live in Massachusetts, which is obviously the winters right now, and we have a very limited season. So sometimes, you know, I try to, like I said, some people do a little dig of the aha because I try to find that connection. Like, hey, by the way, you know, you have a bunch of leaves in your backyard. Those can become part of compost, and those free soil. You know, I try to use things that are either free, sorry, people that can save money. And definitely cardboard is something big, you know, that people are like, wow, I have like a whole basement full of cardboard. You know, this could be used to create a garden. So usually in Worcester, we use that. We use cardboard, things that are out there that could be used, seen as waste or a lot of work to put out. It could be used to create soil. And that's exciting for people. This is very exciting because they're like, wow, I have all this stuff. And then they're like, oh, what about newspaper? Can I use, you know, certain paper? And we're like, yeah, you can, you know, we kind of go into that. So I think it becomes an exciting aha moment. It's like, wow, I didn't know. And then what I also hear is kind of like, I remember, you know, they remember either their parents or grandparents of doing this, but they never called it permaculture. It's like, yeah, because this is a practice that we've been doing, and this is a way to reintroduce it again. So you get all those awesome reactions, and I think that's what I love. It's like, oh, yay, that's exciting, and they already make a plan on how to go about it, either at the home or the apartment and all that.
Yeah, that's fun. It's really good fun.
Yeah.
What does your typical day look like for you? And before you answer that, let me commend you for managing your time the way that you are managing it.
Thank you.
With the, you know, let me explain to the listeners. Yeah. I sent Cynthia an email on a day where she wasn't in the office, and the email explained, you know, what her office hours are now that she's a new mom, and how she was separating family time from work time and taking care of herself as well. And I thought it's a really fine example, that email, of recognizing who is contacting you, but mm-hmm. also setting your boundaries. And so how did you come to write that email?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that. I would say after being burned out for many years, it'd be working all the time, anytime, you know, having my email on my phone, which is good and bad because then you're constantly on it. I think, you know, I came into this independent educator consulting world because I had to take care of myself mentally. You know, I suffer from depression, and, you know, after having the baby, I definitely went through the postpartum depression and anxiety. So I had, you know, like mental health, you know, there's a stigma about it, but it is, you know, you have to take care of it exactly how you do physically, you know, physically ill. So I had to be brave and be like, I need time for self-care. And that's why I do have, so my typical day is a little chaotic sometimes. I do have a small part-time job right now to help meets because I'm currently doing more rebranding of my business instead of planning, kind of strategic planning of that. So I'm not really doing more, you know, I'm not getting jobs within it right now. So I want to really take that time to do that. So, you know, I set up the time from like Tuesdays through Thursday. I will check my email and reply and do consulting related work those times. You know, with a little one, I want to also take time to spend with her and with, for me to also run errands and go to doctors and do things like that and maybe take a longer nap in the morning. So, you know, Mondays and Fridays, I try to do that piece. And on the weekends, I try to spend them more with my you know, my husband or family members or friends who come and visit. So, it took a while. I, like, you know, switched it back and forth. And I think being able to have that automatic email was really important because I wanted to acknowledge, like you mentioned, you know, people who do email me and share that, but also have them let them know that I do need time. You know, there's a time and place for business, and I also need to do that. And it can be challenging when you first starting your own independent consulting or educator or things like that. You know, you get emails or calls at different times, and you can acknowledge, be like, okay, thank you. You know, let's talk more about on this day. So, you know, I think it took a while. For a while, I would, you know, work many hours and schedule things on weekends when family wanted to get together. So it was challenging. It was very challenging. I think this past summer was the first summer I had off for many years, over 7 years of doing work. So it was very, it was weird. It was exciting, but also, you know, I'm used to being so busy that being so still was also really an interesting process for me. I was also, you know, expecting the baby in the summer. So I was busy in that sense, but it was a lot all about focusing on me, which was very unique and different and definitely needed. So I think part of, you know, an advice for other independent educators who are listening to this is that, you know, definitely take time for you and things that really matter because you're doing this independent work. I know I did it because I wanted to have the hours. I wanted to be my own boss. I wanted to have the hours that I can to work and then have time to play outside and do things that I'm passionate about that do not relate to work. So thank you. Thank you for acknowledging that. At the beginning, I was like, oh, I hope nobody's offended, but nobody is. Everybody's like, wow, how do you do that? Like, how, you know, like you mentioned, how do you make time? I was like, well, you have to. So even going to the gym, and I'm trying to do that, like on Monday nights, that's my movement time that I take care of, like my body, whether I go to a class or I go to the chiropractor. Those days I'm making it official, like, you know, after 5, that's me time. And I would say, you know, acknowledge my partner, my husband, who was like, okay, go away from the house and don't worry about the baby. And having that support system always helps too. So I do have to acknowledge that.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned that you are refocusing your business. And what do you plan to focus on next? Where would you like to take your business now, your services and your knowledge? What would you like to do?
Yeah, so I just wanted to share that I'm currently taking a sort of like entrepreneurship winter accelerator program. So I'm focusing and learning more like how to run a business and what it takes, you know, learning from experts that are local here in my area. I also have 3 mentors, which is very exciting. They're not in the environmental field, but they have different businesses, and it's very good to hear different feedback. So with that, I came into this program, and I was like, I need a logo, and I hired a graphic designer who's like, well, what about branding? Like, what are your colors, and what's your story? What do you sell? And I was like, oh, okay, I have to think about it more. Not so much a logo to look nice and professional. So I think right now I'm doing a lot of reflection, like I mentioned, like strategic planning on what I'm offering. I would say with the government shutdown, it was a reality hit for me because 2 of my contracts with clients are federally funded. And with the shutdown, there was this big question mark. It's like, oh, am I going to get paid? Is this sustainable enough for me to keep my business? So I realized that I'm like, I need to learn how to diversify my income stream and how to I get paid, you know, because eventually I want to create a consulting firm that I can have either partners or employees that are environmental educators and they do all this work. So I am currently looking at rebranding my name because Pelagium is a Latin name and not many people know about it or it's confusing and they look at me like, what do you do? So I'm sort of looking at how to make it more accessible and also creating either curriculums or templates that I can, you know, sell online. I'll probably have some for free, but also putting myself out there even more and pushing my comfort zone to creating training videos and having that as well. So that if people, organizations, or they want to kind of get a feel of what I do, they can check out a video first, and then if they want to have in-person training, then, you know, I get hired for that. So those are sort of like the steps that I'm taking now in really learning about looking how to really value my expertise and then my products, which is something very unique, you know, because sometimes at the beginning you're like, oh, I don't know how much, like what price to put, like people are going to afford it. But if you put a value in your, you're the expert in that, I think, you know, you'll find the clients that you need and will need that. So It's a confidence booster, to always say, to put myself out there and do the strategic planning. And I think I like that, being able to take my time, you know, to really consider that piece of, you know, what's my brand, what am I selling, like who really are my customers, and what's my price, like am I really pricing my products or my services at the right price? You know, what's the competitors out there? So it's a lot of studying. So I feel like I'm back in school to do that. And it's exciting. You know, I should be done with all of this by March, which is like in 3 weeks. But it's a fun time to be this busy and then looking at how then have these products for the fall and go from there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, you are very, very busy.
Yeah.
And you're being thoughtful and investigating everything. And it's really good. You mentioned that you're working with people outside of the field of environmental education.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I've come to learn to work with people from various different industries, because if you only talk to people within your circles, you know, you all have the same blind spots, you know. You all see things the same way. And so it's good to talk to other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the insight that I get from my mentors, you know, one of my mentors, she owns a pet service. And, you know, I get all these incredible marketing information and how to go about contract with clients in different systems. So this has been really incredible to look beyond, outside, like you say, outside of the box. And do that. So it's very exciting. One thing I found that one of my mentors asked, and I found very interesting, especially as an independent, you know, consultant, that you probably are, you know, networking and sharing, like, I do these services, is sort of to create a job description for myself, which I was like, whoa, it kind of blew my mind. So that really helped to be like, oh, what am I really doing? Or what do I want to do? So I'm sharing that because maybe other independent educators want to learn. You know, creating a job description for myself really helped. This is what I do currently. I do everything, you know, I'm a business owner. But maybe I can look and see where I need more help and get either hire an expert in this piece. Like, you know, like I mentioned, I want a logo. I could have done my own logo, but I'm like, well, I need help because I don't really have time. But and with that, I like, now I'm rebranding and learning so much from this graphic designer about business. So if, you know, it's always good to invest in your business and sort of invest in what you need help. And it's okay to ask for help.
You are just all over. And I read about your work.
Really?
Yes.
Sometimes it's like good, but also like, oh, I feel like I'm all over. So sometimes you have to be out there, you know, to kind of get the word out and see what works and what doesn't work, you know. So definitely I feel like doing community, like one-on-one community education, I went the permaculture route, sort of teaching that piece and like gardening-related and food-related education. And then I also do like the professional development as well. So I saw myself in these two. And for a while, I was like, I think I'm doing, you know, I'm kind of doing a little bit of everything. But I think a lot of it is also, my name is out there too because of my involvement in the community here. So it's been exciting and you know, hearing positive things about, like, oh yeah, I know that person and they do great work. It's also reassuring to hear that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you gotta be really out there, because when community, you know, when you are, I feel like when I'm all about community engagement and being, I mean, I'm part of my community, so you gotta build relationships and be out there.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. And you do a lot of community work. Well, you sent a lot of seed to Puerto Rico. Your family is from Puerto Rico.
Yes, correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Right after both Hurricane Irma and Maria hit 2 years ago, I was like, the first thing is like food, you know, what people are going to eat. And you also have this sense of everybody wants to help in sort of in a crisis. So I recall hearing from a project in Puerto Rico of you know, I was like, I don't really have money. I'm poor. I'm like, I can't really spend money, but I can, I know community members and I can try to do something here. And, you know, they had a list of different tools and things. So I was like, oh, seeds. I know many farmers. I know people who are involved in food who are could definitely help me. So I sent, I would say, over 2,000 seed packages. I reached out to local stores. There were some seed swap events. You know, asked the organizer, can we, you know, have a box to collect seeds for Puerto Rico? So it was a very exciting project, and I hope to do that again in ways to be involved. I send seeds to some farms in Puerto Rico in different areas. I also got in touch with individuals who either have a garden or have a farm and also send it to them. One of the cool projects that I send it to is a group of women farmers who have their own farm businesses in Puerto Rico. And so it was exciting to connect with them. I grew up in Puerto Rico, so they're like in a town nearby where I grew up. So it was exciting. And my goal is to go visit them, you know, in the near future to look at the farms and build more of that relationship and keep helping as much as possible. So we'll probably do some seed collection now that the season is starting and, like, there's a lot of seed swapping and all that happening, and send some to the projects there. So.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Thank you.
As a food systems scholar, what do you find is the most misunderstood thing about our food system?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the first thing that comes to my mind, the first thing that's misunderstood is that either communities of color or marginalized communities don't care about healthy food or don't care about farming or don't care about, you know, vegetables and things like that. And I think I feel like part of my professional development, you know, services that I offer in the ways that I go about community and advocated for community and these research-based, you know, articles or research that is done throughout the whole area is to really talk about what's the systematic problem there, the oppression that's been done in just the history of food justice and food in general, and why, you know, we have food deserts, why people in low-income communities don't have access to fresh foods, and how it's all systematic. It's all made for communities, the poorest communities, to be isolated, segregated, and not have access to healthy foods. So it kind of tied into all the other systems, whether it's economic, housing. So I feel like that's one of the things that's misunderstood, that based on one research or one study that's done. And that's something I also advocate too, because I live in a city that is mostly a big Latino population, and we have found ourselves being like guinea pig for a lot of projects or a lot of research, but then not seeing results or promised projects. You know, they're like, oh, we got to do a study on how many people, like an example, I'm trying to think of a random example. It might not be one that happened recently. You know, how many people like this part of this vegetable and why and why not? And when you involve community and just leave after you do, you take everything that you need, you know, you leave a bad taste when it comes to science, or you leave a bad taste when it comes to research. And I love research. I love science. It's my passion. One of my biggest passions. I love science. So I left a bad taste, or, you know, being used as a Latinx person who's really interested about research, used as a token to reach out to the communities to get information from them and not really build that genuine relationship. So that's what's missed. I think it's missed is both the funding, you know, like there's not enough funding for research and for work, but also that genuine relationship building there. And I think it's a big thing, just a lot of one-off projects, like just like, you know, science, this one-off experiment, and you don't kind of build on that, and that's a problem because you only have that research or expertise written, but there's no follow-up on that piece. So I feel like that's what's missing specifically in the food systems piece, like that humanity piece of like how do you build that relationship and consistency and see a project or, you know, go on for many years.
How can researchers then work on the relationship building before and after their involvement in a community? What would you recommend, or what do you see from your experiences that needs to happen for a genuine investigation into a topic so that it doesn't leave a bad taste in the community's mouth? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. Part of it, and I think that's why I'm looking more at offering those professional development services instead of looking at just the organization or institution. Like, what is your culture when it comes to community engagement and in topics about diversity, equity, and inclusion? I think that's one. Like, really looking at, like, how do we go about being involved in community and what does community even mean to us? What does diversity mean to us? So it's kind of like having a foundation and definition for that. I think that's one. The other one is really investing in both, you know, monetarily when it comes to research and community, like investing that, but also in staff time and expertise in that piece. So being able to be genuinely, you know, building a relationship takes time. Like if you're either dating or having friends, you know, it takes time. You know, you have good times, you got bad times. So, and I think part of it is really working with partners in the community for a long time and open to feedback, because we all have different agendas and things to meet. So being flexible to adapt and change any topic or any research that you do based on that. So really engage them from the beginning. You know, I have funds for research. You know, what is the community interested in? This is what we can offer. How can we partner in that piece? And really, you know, follow through that, you know, keep that conversation going. It'll just like you might send a text message to your friend, like, hey, let's hang out Saturday, you know, do the same thing with organizations, like be constantly, you know, involved in them. If they have events, go to their events. And that's what I mean, like investing both time and money, if it's possible to building that relationship. Researchers asking funders to really be invested in giving funds for a while. And I think that also has to shift with funders and foundations to be like, hey, you know, if you really want to invest in the community and see change, we need funds for more than 2 years or 3 years. And just for, you know, because that's the thing, a lot of funders I feel like I've seen, they like innovation and projects that are new, but they don't really fund both the organization that's hosting it or follow up on that. So also changing that. So it's a lot of, I see it more as systems. Like, how can you change the systems there so that it can have a ripple effect down the line?
Thank you, Cynthia, for the work that you do and for all the change that you create. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Learn more about Cynthia and the Permaculture Design Program by visiting the show notes for this episode at talaterra.com.